Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. We are still going through the Constitution, and what we want to do is I could have ended the formal part of the Constitution in our last episode, because this happens to be the shortest part. However, it is the most important part. If you go from the first article of the Constitution to the 27th Amendment, there is no more important portion of the Constitution than Article 7. It is the utmost. This is the essence of the Constitution. And so this is why you'll see and hear me, you know, if you ever see me speak to a group, just literally get up and start talking without really having a prepared presentation of educating somebody on something, I always challenge everybody, what is the most important part of the Constitution? So if you happen to be in that audience, you happen to be on that phone call, you'll know exactly what I'm going to say. It's Article 7. And so we'll place context to that as soon as we tell you that this show is also sponsored by RepublicReview.org. And this is the only show that gives you the academic evidence and the academic evidence-based solutions. I can't find any other. There's no way a professor has ever been, and I've engaged before, probably one of the foremost, one of the most prodigious professors on the Constitution, and I have a high respect for this guy's got over 40 books of details regarding the Constitution and history. I mean, he teaches me stuff all the time, but he cannot refute Republic Review. Cannot refute Republic Review. And because he is a lifelong professor, and I'm not going to mention his name, I will tell you that he supports the Convention of States instead of Republic Review, because he realizes that Republic Review will put our education system upside down. The federal funding would end, and all of these colleges and all of the education, he sees the education system as going completely bankrupt. Well, maybe it should, and as far as I can see, there is still a need for education, but I don't believe we need to create ivory towers for education. I believe that there is great quality education outside of ivory towers. And I believe this is why, if you have a child or you yourself are getting into college and you need a refresher on math, I always tell people to go to yaymath.org. You want to learn, you want to brush up on college level, college entry level math, then go there, because you can get your children to actually enjoy learning math, and actually they'll go a lot farther if they enjoy something, especially enjoy learning something. And so check it out if you yourself are in the pursuit of expanding your education, higher education, whatever. It doesn't matter. Anyway, Timber Nation, timbernation.com. If you're looking for that real solid hardwood type of furnishings to complement your decorum, if you're looking for a good patriotic product, and or, I mean, how many of you have a calendar? Who has calendars on their wall? Well, go get yourself a We the People calendar. It is all about the Constitution, and yours truly has, it actually helps regarding some of the content. We want to make sure that the messaging is moving the people that are receiving this into understanding the Constitution and into demanding that the Constitution be complied to. Because if we have compliance to the Constitution, then what we have, my friends, is the restoration of liberty. Because the Constitution ensures that all people have the liberty to choose for themselves what they are going to do religiously, medically, and all of these things. And it takes government's controls away. Anyway, Harry, I hope you're listening. Oh, Red Pill Expo. Go to Red Pill Expo to get your tickets. We'd love to see you there. Still haven't committed. There is a commitment that we will be doing two meetings with the legislators. So you need to make sure you let the legislators know that this has to go forward and they have to be a part of it. And RadioDustCovers.com, and as well as I do actually run promos for Ad Local, but I just want you to understand that all of these promos are not anything that feeds me a penny, not at all. And so I want you to look at these promos, these companies, as good, solid patriots. I'm friends with them. I've become friends with them because of their business, not because of anything else. It's not like, you know, we met and just started, you know, talking about one thing that led to another, that led to another. And next thing you know, voila, we've become friends. You know, it's really been, I just looked to get some products or what have you, and come to find out, you know, that relationship actually blossomed into a patriotic relationship. So anyway, what we also want to do is remind you that we have a comment line, 425-270-5416. So without any further ado, let me dive into Article 7. And I want to explain this really, really carefully for you. This part of the Constitution, this short sentence, and as a matter of fact, I've never counted the words, so let's do it. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24 words in this sentence. And this sentence completely clarifies everything that you need to understand about the Constitution. First off, this sentence tells you exactly what this Constitution is. It is a compact. How do you extrapolate the fact that this is a compact? It requires, because it states right off the very beginning, the ratification of the conventions of nine states. Oh, those just few words, and literally eight words, that those eight words did it all right there. Ratification is the formal process of accepting a compact, contract, or treaty. So when you're sitting down and you're going through what we would call negotiations in trying to determine whether you want to become a part of this compact, because what's the difference between a compact and a contract? This is simple, folks. A contract is between two parties. A compact is between multiple parties. And it's not, a charter is actually something that has been written by a sovereign, like God, our creator, or the king, or something like that. And so all of the colonies were all started under charters. And then eventually they created their own constitution, they created their own government. And then, as they created their own government as a colony, because as English people, they had these basic rights, all of a sudden their rights were being denied them, and these colonies united on the fundamental principles of their what they believe are inalienable rights, and they were. And as a matter of fact, when I hear people, I've seen progressives go around and try to use the Declaration of Independence as an argument that America was based on that all men were created equal except for slaves. They used the definition. I want you to get this now. They used those words, all men were created equal, as racist words, because they said that those words were used to define that only white people in America were created equal. It excluded blacks. But they don't understand the origins of those words. I'm telling you right now, in 1770, Thomas Jefferson, and I forget the person's name, and you know I'm guilty of this, but this is in my first book, and you can also find this fact out if you read the Dumas Malone series. It's a six-book series on Thomas Jefferson. Thomas Jefferson, in one of his very first cases in law, defended a mulatto, I believe it was a mulatto man. I could be wrong. The three letters man was there. It could be woman, but anyway, what he stated in this argument was that all men were created equal, all people were created equal, and that in the laws of Virginia, a mulatto is a person that is half black and half white. And this person and the laws in Virginia stated that if you were a mulatto, if you're half and half, that the first half of your life would be subject to slavery, and the last half of your life you'd be subject to freedom. Well, so Thomas Jefferson was defending, because the slave owner was not going to relinquish this slave. And so Thomas Jefferson was defending the mulatto and saying, you know, look, this whole concept that people are born into slavery is hogwash. We're all born free. All men were created equal. Those few words were actually uttered and a part of his argument in basically defending the freedom of a mulatto or a slave. So don't tell me that those words are exclusive to only white people, when the origin of those words actually came from a defense argument in trying to free a slave. So when people start spouting off something that they think, oh, I've got a historical fact here, and they put them in these little pithy memes, go do your research. You'll find out that 9 times out of 10, they're wrong, especially the progressives, because they never paid attention to history. They're just trying to recreate it. We'll be right back after these two promos.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and their 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so let's get back to this thing we're talking about regarding, because I just gave you some history on the states, the Declaration, and that's what happens when I start going down a rat hole. So forgive, rat hole, rat hill. You can go down a hill. Anyway, the conventions of nine states was a bypass, by the way. So in this very first eight words, the ratification of the conventions of nine states was bypassing those legislators that were at the trough or the seat of power. And if you understand the conventions of states and these days, this actually went back to the counties, and the counties were the ones that decided who would be their delegates, and they would come up with how many seats would be available to basically occupy whatever room that they got. And if I remember correctly, there was this, it was a church or a theater. I want to say it was a church that they were convening in, and and it held a couple hundred people. And there were one of the, this is just a little tidbit of worthless facts. One of the times that Patrick Henry was orating, there was this storm that came along, and it he basically, you know, said, you know, God would put asunder, you know, these states if we, you know, ratified this. And there was lightning bolts and thunder and everything else. And so people weren't sure whether God was actually supporting or chastising Patrick Henry, because everybody left the church to go to a more safer place, because those types of storms can rattle and or destroy a large building because of the, you know, the lack of materials. Back in those days, larger buildings were not as strong as smaller buildings because they were using the same size materials. Anyway, needless to say, that it was a convention that was limited based on the venue. And so some states had a large venue and some states had smaller venues, because that's how far the states were developed and so forth. So when you look at why only so many people showed up in some of these big states like Virginia, in contrast to how many people showed up in Connecticut or New Hampshire. I mean, shoot, look at New Hampshire's legislative body. Their legislative body is bigger than any other state. They're one of the smallest states and one of the least populated. This is because they take their representation very seriously. So anyway, back to Article 7, the ratification of the conventions of nine states. So what does this tell us? It tells us, one, that the Constitution is a compact because it requires a formal acceptance of the parties to the compact. So who are the parties? Is it the federal government, the president, Supreme Court, Congress? No. It says nine states shall be sufficient for the establishment of this Constitution between the states so ratifying the same. That is in essence Article 7. But what it just told you and what it just affirmed is that all the states that become a part of this union are the parties together in this constitutional republic. In other words, this is their compact. They're the ones that bought into this. And in so doing, they basically commit to giving the government these very specific powers. There is no commitment to any other powers that the government has usurped. Now the government, the only way the government can be held in check is for the parties. This is why we go through the resolutions in detail. Why Madison points out that the parties are the tribunal. There is no tribunal above them. The Supreme Court can't even hear this case. Because the day they hear this case is the day that they have lost their position as a grantee from the parties and become superior, which is actually a perversion. It's almost like saying that your children become superior to you in this life. Can't happen. It is a perversion, and so there may be a point where your children may make more money. They may be the president of a company. You may be working for them. In some way or fashion, there may be some level of twisting and or perversion in a relationship with the parent and a child, but it will never pervert, or it will never become a legitimate relationship, because it is a perversion. The parents are always the parents, and the child is always the child, regardless of whether that child be an adult or not. And the responsibility of the parent is never removed at any point in time, regardless of how old that child is. It doesn't matter. You still will be held accountable to him, our creator, in how you've taken the time in, let's just call it, doing behavioral adjustments and modifications in counseling and providing assistance to your child so that they can learn the things that we're accountable in teaching them and so forth. But anyhow, Article 7, if you understand the fact that this is a compact and you start looking at everything that they're supposed to do if they're violating this. Now, remember, I told you I'm color coding this. So we're seeing how certain parts of the Constitution, and there are lots of colors here. We've got orange, we've got yellow, and we got red. And, you know, you can't find, you know, many places except for possibly, you know, some of the perfunctory stuff. But even still, when we talk about representations and so forth, we're finding that there are violations. But as Madison put it, let me be very clear. Some of the violations are perfunctory. They're tertiary. They're just not important. They're not important enough to, you know, necessarily, you know, cause a, you know, a calling for the states to assemble in republic review. You know, such as, and I'll give you a case in point. Let's just say that there is a person who is running for representative of their legislative district, and they're 24 and a half years old, and they will turn 25 during their first year of service as a representative. Well, the Constitution is very clear. They cannot serve if they are 24. They have to be 25. Well, how egregious is the violation for the people to elect a 24 and a half year old, you know, a not 25 year old, almost 25, and will be turning 25 during their first year, maybe 2 weeks after they get read in or, you know, sworn in. Only 2 weeks difference. How egregious is that in contrast to the government taking away your right of petition, taking away your right of religious expression, taking away everybody's right to assemble or to go to work and engage in commerce. So just to be clear, there are some things that even though they may be violations and they're outright violations, they may not be as egregious to cause a call for republic review, but if you understand republic review, and once it finishes, I would recommend that the states, either on an annual or a biannual basis, convene quickly to be able to do a review and a look at and chastise Congress if they, you know, if they've allowed somebody to come in and chastise that state and that congressional district for, you know, electing somebody that violated that, if they really feel that they need to lower the age. But I'm actually more inclined to increase the age because of the susceptibility of all of these young minds being so perverted by our indoctrination system. I think I think you have to be 35 years old to really have a good handle for the average citizen to be able to have a good handle. I mean, we just don't on government, civics, law, and those types of things because they're not being taught this stuff. This is why I am a huge proponent. There we go. I was going to say opponent, but I knew that was the wrong word. I'm a huge proponent for having tests for public service, because if we actually have a standard, not just an age limit, but a standard, then I'm absolutely okay. But we can't just believe that a 25-year-old, like AOC or anybody else, understands what they're doing. And if we have a standard and we're all aware of what that standard must be, you have to have so much years experience, you need to be capable of doing this, and you have to understand that you can't do these types of things. And so in so doing and having that kind of standard, then I think that, you know, when somebody actually violates that oath of office and they've been tested and certified that they understand what they're doing, then the removal of that person for violating their oath of office becomes a lot simpler. We don't have to scratch our heads and go, well, you know, doggone it. Did we happen to, you know, did we forget something here? Did we happen to allow you know, these people to not understand what they're doing, where we actually require plumbers and carpenters and other people to have at least some level of certification or understand, like nurses and so forth, continuing education. Folks, we have to step it up. Anyway, let me move on, because the Constitution is not done. And for us to actually move forward, here's the interesting thing. After Article 7, the Secretary of the Constitutional Convention, William Jackson, basically provides some inserts as to why these words were inserted into the Constitution. It was because they were omitted in back in those days to actually go to press. It was a lot difficult. It was more difficult to actually do that because they didn't have computers and printers. So they just actually fixed the pages. And I will give you those corrections and why you see those. We'll be right back.
Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL. Or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so I'm not going to go through, because I could easily go into the rat holes, but I'm not going to go through what they really put in. Actually, there was a the, there was a 30, there was an erasure, and I believe the 30, partially written, was actually changing, because I believe it was the day of the Constitution. I mean, when they were signing it, it was that day that they said, we need to change this, because there were a lot of people that weren't going to sign it. And they could not print out that many constitutions that quickly. So I believe the 30 that that they list here is the 30 for representation, because it was 40,000 was the original representation. In other words, a person going to Congress in the House of Representatives were to represent 40 and no more than 40,000 people. So they changed that to 30,000. And there is nowhere in there that allows them to change their own representation of we the people. There's nothing. There was an amendment that James Madison put in that said that when they get to 100 representatives, then it'll shift to 40. And then when they get to 200 representatives, it will shift, S-H-I-F-T, shift to 50,000 and cap off at 50,000. In other words, down the road, when we have that many people of 200 or more, then we will have 200 representatives. So that's a lot of people. But bottom line is that the Capitol itself would not be suitable. They would need to then make the adjustments to the capital to allow it to grow for the next, you know, century or two. However, if we look today based on the cap of that, if you actually look today at the 30,000, I mean, we're talking about thousands and thousands of representatives that we would need to have. And I'm going to tell you, it would probably be to the tune of 10 to 11,000, somewhere in there. If it is at 50,000, actually, no, the 50,000. So it would, yeah, it would be over 11,000. Just my math isn't that good right now. But anywho, the 30,000 would be over 11, but if it was 50,000, it would be just under 7,000. And so, my friends, what I'm telling you is that they're violating the essence, the very essence of a representative government. How is it that one person can actually represent almost a million people? I mean, when they talked, and if you read the discussions of the Constitutional Convention, they could not fathom how a person could even represent more than 50,000 people, just let alone be able to keep the name straight, who they are, and those things were important to them. They weren't just numbers. People weren't numbers in their day. They were people. Anyway. Then after these adjustments or this editing was injected that was done by William Jackson, the secretary, this was written, done in convention by the unanimous consent of the states present the 17th day of September in the year of our Lord, 1787, and of the independence of the United States of America, the 12th, in witness whereof we have hereunto subscribed our names. And it has George Washington as the president and deputy from Virginia. And so deputy means delegate. Then they had New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Connecticut. Every state was represented. There was only one state that had a single representative, and that was New York. New York actually had a couple of representatives, but only Alexander Hamilton signed it. And when you go, well, hold it, I know that Virginia actually had more than just two, James Madison, well, and George Washington, but James Madison and John Blair. We know that Governor Randolph was there, and we know that George Mason was there, and both of them refused to sign. So, and actually, when you look at Massachusetts, you will see that Eldridge Gerry isn't there either. And so I'm just pointing out that they only put the names on those who committed to signing. So that's why you only see those names there and not everybody that actually went to the as a delegate. Anyway, so this is how it was done, and this was the cover letter that was sent out to the states. So just remember, keep in mind that there is this huge argument that this was all illegitimate, that they didn't have the commission or the power to do this, when, again, we cannot deny the rights, the inalienable rights to alter and or abolish governments when the governments continually abuse. And these men understood that mayhem would ensue, but they didn't know. They didn't know that France was 1 year away from a communist revolution where this despotic dictator would take over by the name of Napoleon Bonaparte. And so when we look, see, even that name I struggle with. As we look at what would have happened in 1791 or 92, when Bonaparte rises to power and he sees that the Americas are squandering and struggling and they can't even pay their debt, don't you believe that he would have sent, you know, all of his fleet to America to basically extract his pound of flesh and take over America? And maybe he would have even worked with Britain to say, we're going to take a part of America and we'll leave the northern side to you and we'll take the southern side. Or he could have worked with Spain and allowed Spain to take the southern side, and he would have taken the north. I'm just saying he would have easily created an alliance that had the ability to project a force to go in and actually conquer America. We were still licking our wounds. We didn't even have a navy at that time. We were barely struggling, and we were barely able to keep up with Britain. And had Britain come back to wage war against us, the only reason they did it because they had other entanglements. They had entanglements with the French and other nations. So anyway, as we look at this, this is the cover letter that went with this. In convention Monday, September 17th, 1787, present the states of New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Mr. Hamilton from New York, because he was the only one there, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Delaware, and you notice that they leave out Rhode Island. All of the 12 states were listed, not Rhode Island. Resolved that the preceding constitution be laid before the United States in Congress assembled, and that it is the opinion of this convention that it should afterwards be submitted to a convention of delegates chosen in each state by the people thereof under the recommendation of its legislature for their assent and ratification, and that each convention assenting to and ratifying the same should give notice thereof to the United States in Congress assembled. Resolved that it is the opinion of this convention that as soon as the conventions of nine states shall have ratified this Constitution, the United States in Congress assembled should fix a day on which electors shall be appointed to the states which have ratified the same, and a day on which the electors should assemble to vote for the president, and the time and place for commencing proceedings under this Constitution. Interesting. To elect electors who would then choose the president in accordance with this new Constitution. That after such publication, the electors should be appointed and the senators and representatives elected, that the electors should meet on the day fixed for the election of the president and should transmit their votes certified, signed, sealed, and directed as the Constitution requires to the Secretary of the United States in Congress assembled, that the senators and representatives should convene at the time, place assigned, that the senators should appoint a president of the Senate for the sole purpose of receiving, opening, and counting the votes for president, and that after he shall be chosen, the Congress, together with the president, should without delay proceed to execute this Constitution. And one of the things that they would have to do is they would have to create the Supreme Court, the justices to be appointed to that. And so they, you know, had to figure out what to do and so forth. Now, here's the interesting thing. That this is not the full preamble, but this is basically a short part of the preamble. The conventions of a number of the states having at the time of their adoption the Constitution expressed a desire, in order to prevent misconstruction or abuse of its powers, that further declaratory and restrictive clauses should be added. Now, the first amendment that I'm going to read was an amendment that was not ratified. It is still out there floating around, and I believe 11 states have ratified this amendment now, only 11. And so all we need is whatever the 27 states to get to 38. Now, some people argue that 11 should be sufficient, but this is where I was talking about representation and making the adjustment to actually account for an increase in how many people a representative in Congress would represent. And this is what it says. After the first enumeration required by the first article of the Constitution, there shall be one representative for every 30,000 until the number shall amount to 100 representatives. I'm inserting representatives. After which the proportion shall be so regulated by Congress that there shall be not less than one representative. We'll get back to this and we'll finish this First Amendment, this original First Amendment, when we come back from these two promos. So please hang on. We'll be right back after this. Thank you so much.
I have been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to so that you can understand what we all need to do. I'm trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so let's get this moving here. And basically what we have here is that Congress, that as I'm going to read it from the top because we don't necessarily remember what was just said. After the first enumeration required by the first article of the Constitution, there shall be one representative for every 30,000 until the number shall amount to 100 representatives. I'm again adding that. After which the portion shall be so regulated by Congress that there shall not be less than 100 representatives, nor less than one representative for every 40,000 persons until the number of representatives shall amount to 200. After which the proportion shall be so regulated by Congress that there shall not be less than 200 representatives, nor more than one representative for every 50,000 persons. And that is it. So they believed by not ratifying this that they could keep it at 30,000. Well, Congress actually decided, well, no, we're going to actually take over and we're going to usurp and maintain this ridiculous low representation, and or actually take this low representation and this low body of, what is it, 435 seats. I think 435 seats. And as the United States kept growing, well, they didn't add more seats to keep it at 30,000. They started making the adjustments by themselves without amending the Constitution. Well, why is this important? Why is it that this, you know, this is so big? If Madison felt it required an amendment to adjust how many people are to be represented in the House of Representatives, then that power was not delegated to Congress. This is why this amendment was a part of the Bill of Rights, that they can't. And as a matter of fact, just to be very, very clear, the federal government cannot make any modifications to the Electoral College clauses or any of the clauses or processes that are delineated within that Constitution. They can't move away from the word militia and call it something different, like National Guard, without amending the Constitution and providing the clarity of what this new entity is and how it is supposed to function in every capacity that the National Guard was injected. So, to be clear, we have a lot of little things, and this is why I go back to how important is this? Well, this right here is very important. I truly believe that the reason we have a cabal, we have these couple of cabals in Congress right now, and they're party-driven instead of state-driven. This is how the parties have been able to actually control Congress, the uniparty, if you want to call it that, the two-party system. If we actually had almost 7,000 representatives, there's no way the party can control that. And when I say the party, the National Party. Because now the National Party would have to control all 50 states. And they don't control all 50 states. They only control the big ones, where all the money is. They ignore all of the other states. And so if we actually moved and changed this, it would be a lot harder to even control the states, because now our congressional districts would be much smaller. And there would be the opportunity of breaking away, because if you look in Washington State, there are congressional districts in some of these states, like California, there are congressional districts that are, you know, millions of square miles. Millions. If you look at California out there in the heather, you know, the hinterland, you'll find that there are huge congressional districts. The same thing in, you know, Wyoming is one representative. Well, Wyoming would actually have, if it was 50,000, Wyoming would have 10. And don't you think Wyoming would be a little bit better? Every state would be better off. And the people would be better off if they were represented. However, they wouldn't be able to meet in the Capitol, but they don't need to meet in the Capitol. We've already proven that they can function just like the rest of the world virtually. And we could actually just use those 435 seats for either the senior representatives out of the state or what have you. But we don't have to stay within a box where technology has freed us and allowed us to get outside these boxes. We just have to do it smartly to ensure that the essence, the whole meaning and intent of representation is actually being maintained. And I am telling you today that our representation based on this amendment right here and looking at Section 1 of the Constitution, or Article 1, I mean, of the Constitution, it is not being abided by. The essence is lost. Our representation is lost. This is why we have a government that is paid for by, you know, the richest and the corporations that all work together to buy their globalist congressmen. And even though you may have a really good guy that goes in there, they all get corrupted. Not one of them can even see straight in understanding how far out they are. Because I see some, you know, like Massey and others, you know, a couple of them that are complaining. But I don't see him out on the front steps talking about the invasion and demanding that the federal government do its job in accordance with the Constitution. I don't see that type of stuff. Now, Rand Paul has done some things like that, but he cherry picks. He doesn't call it all out, and he doesn't list like Jefferson does, that the state should be listening and auditing the Constitution. But anyway, moving on. The second article, or the second amendment, was ratified in 1992. And this is the 27th Amendment. No law, so I'm actually ending because it was a part of the Bill of Rights, so I'm ending it here. No law verifying or varying the compensation of the service of the senators and representatives shall take effect until an election of representatives shall have intervened. In other words, if somebody like Hillary Clinton becomes a senator, and they, while she becomes this new senator, she votes to increase their pay. That can't be done until after that person has been elected, if you understand what I'm saying. So basically, that person has to be then reelected to be able to obtain that new compensation. Now, the little story behind this, and you really should read about the 27th Amendment. This young man found out he was in college, and I think it was his thesis that he believed that, you know, he could create a movement to actually ratify this one amendment. Now, I don't know why he did this, because this to me is, you know, a perfunctory type of amendment, it's not that heavy. There's going to be a delay in when you get your compensation. You have to be reelected first. The one before that, the talks, this is the essence of a representative government, a Republican form of government. Why didn't he pick this one? Well, the reason why is because he wanted to prove his professor, because his professor told him that he couldn't do it, and he did. And so he actually picked one, and I think he had it in his craw that he wanted to actually go on this political, you know, mission of proving that one person can actually create a motivation of doing something. You know, like maybe Republic Review. But what has to happen is that one person has to sell it on enough people to lead on that, because bottom line, he didn't do this by himself. He got a lot of people to become champions for it, and that's what we have to do as well. That's exactly what we have to do. Okay, so the third article, which is, you know, and again, this is the Constitution Society, and they look at the Bill of Rights as articles or amendments, right? So the third amendment or first amendment to the Constitution, Congress shall make no law respecting... Every part of this is in red. Every part of this is being violated. Okay? Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for the redress of grievances. Now, peaceably assemble is a separate right. Okay, and to petition government for redress of grievances is a separate right. What you do not hear is the right of protesting and rallying in non-legal assembly areas. What is a legal assembly area? Well, in some areas, it could be a park. It could be a park, but some cities have required that if you're going to have a group of so many, a certain number, arbitrary maybe, but they pick a certain number to say, if you're going to have a group over this size, you need to register with us so that, you know, we can make sure that you're going to be accommodated. And what we want to do is they want to notify people that the park may not be inhabitable or be usable on this particular day because there's going to be a large crowd there. Now, that is given by the local government, and it's not necessarily an infringement on your right, but it's because you can assemble in any legal place, but there are safety concerns. Like if you want to assemble in a restaurant or a theater or some place like that, they have codes to say if you have too many people inside this building, you know, for a fire or what have you, then you'll be breaking code, and it's all about safety. Government can create laws for purposes of safety for the assembly in that area. They're not actually creating laws to keep you from assembling. They're just creating safety laws. Like you can't yell fire in a theater, or you know, you can't yell bomb at an airport because it could cause mass panic. People get hurt. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and Republic Review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.